You're listening to the Fusion Patrol Podcast.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
And tonight we are going to be dipping a little bit away from our usual reviewing, and we're going to be talking about what we think are the 10 best science fiction shows of all time. And just by way of preface, recently on the website Newsarama, they posted an article saying, you know, here's what we think are the 10 best science fiction shows of all time.
And we must clarify, we're talking television shows.
Television shows, yes. Now, the guys over at Newsarama, gals, I actually didn't pay attention to who wrote the article, sorry about that, picked their 10 out, and they said it was incredibly difficult. And I don't necessarily agree with their list in its entirety. And so that's why I first started out with this exercise. I said, I'm going to make up my list of the 10 best shows, and I realized it is incredibly difficult.
It is very difficult.
This is really tough, because it's really a fine line between saying, what is it? Is it because I just like the show, or is it because there really is something that makes it, you know, is it special because it was special to me at the right time and place in my life, or...
Am I being subjective or objective about it?
And in the end, I decided I can go and be subjective because, hey, it's my list. And
oh, okay.
Well, there'll be a couple of shows that we talk about. I'm just going to give you a quick rundown of what their list was. And we can talk a little bit about that, and we can talk a little bit about ours and where we see eye to eye and where we don't see eye to eye. And so we're just using theirs as a starter. I'm going to run it down 10 to 1. Number 10, Quantum Leap. Number 9, Firefly. Number 8, Farscape. Number 7, The X-Files. Number 6, The Prisoner. Number 5, Lost. Number 4, they put two of them together, The Twilight Zone and The Outer Limits. And I'm just going to stay right there. That's just a travesty. Those are two different shows.
They are.
And they both deserve a place on this list.
I agree. But I wouldn't tie them, no.
But, yeah, they don't deserve to be tied. I think that's a ageist thing. It's because they're from, like, the 50s and 60s.
Oh, I've got my theory on that.
Yeah. Number 3, they put Battlestar Galactica, the reboot. Number 2, they put Star Trek, and for the best show of all time, Doctor Who. Now, there's some real good things about that list.
I think there's some bad things about that list.
There's some real bad things about that list. So,
well, before we go any further, yeah. Let's just discuss... Okay, now you already said what... You really didn't have any criteria for picking your list. You decided to just go subjective.
Well, you know, yeah. I mean, I did have some things that I thought about that, you know, I it wasn't just, gosh, I just like it. There had to be something that I can say, this is why I liked it. So, but, you know, your mileage will vary.
Well, in my case, I looked at it, I looked for one of two things. One was the show... Did it break new ground in any way, shape, or form? Or two, did it become part of mainstream pop culture? In other words, did it kind of go beyond just being this little niche genre type show and become something bigger than that and kind of cross demographics? Those are my two criteria. It didn't have to do both. If it met one or the other, it stood a great chance of ending up on my list.
Okay. And you know, there were... There's one thing we also should mention as I drool my words out. Ben and I are... I think our listeners probably know, we're both on the high side of 40. And
I just turned 50.
Well, that's pretty darn high side of 40. I thought you just turned 49. Well, I'm sorry then. Then Ben's an old man, and I'm just getting there.
Oh, bite me.
the
But
so,
yes,
but,
with
but,
this,
so for example,
this,
we
our age is going to betray us.
When we watch these, when I looked at this list, I, even though it didn't stand a snowball's chance in hell of getting on this list, programs like Man from Atlantis, Logan's Run, Planet of the Apes.
Oh, dear God.
All of these shows that were familiar from my youth went through my mind as I tried to put together my list. I mean, they were rejected immediately. It's like, ugh. But there are so many shows that are modern. Like, for example, if you were much younger, you would have to think and reject Roswell, which is a program that...
Oh, heavens, yes.
Yeah, you know, would never think of.
No.
Or that Space Above and Beyond. And, you know, there were several shows in there that just, you know, are not in the right time zone for me in my life to be. So, you know, obviously this list is going to be a little bit probably weighted.
Well, I think part of the problem. Well, one of the things that, and you did kind of touch on this, it is virtually impossible, I think, to be truly 100% objective. When it comes to putting this list together, I mean, it's inevitable that you're going to project some of your own personal likes and dislikes into such a list. I mean, it took me hours to put this thing together. I mean, it took me hours just to write it up. But I've been thinking about this list for some days now, and it was becoming grueling just trying to do it.
But that is the level of dedication we have to the Fusion Patrol listener base. Well, let's look at a couple of them on this list. There are a few on this list that I know what's on my list. I know what's on Ben's list, and there are a couple here that did not make either of our lists.
Gee, I wonder why.
And I want to just talk a little bit about those. Why? What we think of them? For example, their number 10 is Quantum Leap.
Okay.
What did you think of Quantum? I mean,
I watched it.
I was staggered that this was on here.
I did watch the show, and technically it does. It's, I guess you could call that minimalist science fiction. Maybe speculative fiction might fit it a little bit better. I mean, the sci-fi element in it was minimal, really, really minimal. The one thing... It did match one of my areas, part of my criteria, and that is it had to break new ground. Well, yeah, Quantum Leap did break new ground, but I didn't think it was a strong enough show, even though I did watch it. I didn't think it was a strong enough show to actually merit being placed on my list because it... And I know there are Quantum Leap fans who are just going to crucify me for saying this.
Rabid Quantum Leap fans.
I don't think it had the staying power.
And yet, it was on for like 40 years.
Well, it wasn't on that long.
It seemed like 40 years.
Well, in syndication, possibly. But when I say staying power, it really didn't crack in. It didn't become part of the pop culture.
Well, you know, enough
for me to at least qualify to put on the list. I mean, if my list had been expanded to 20, I could see it ending up in the bottom 10 somewhere.
Wow, yeah. I don't think I just did not like the show. I could watch it. For whatever reason, this is solely subjective. I don't like Scott Bakula. I mean, I have nothing against the guy, but I've never seen him in anything that I liked him in. There's just something about him that puts me off. So... it's, you know, it's a big strike about the show already. And that's, you know, that's just casting and me and whatnot. But really, this is... It is a clever reworking of the Fugitive format. You know, you've got the Fugitive, you've got the Incredible Hulk. Remember the days when you could travel from town to town and...
and take on these other identities.
You work into somebody's life for a while, help them out a bit, and then
move on.
Move on. And you know, you can't do that now. I mean, you couldn't get a job in a town without work papers and immigration status and your social security card, and everybody's got a cell phone, and you know, it just the world that plot line doesn't work anymore. And Quantum Leap found a way to do that through both time and space. And so in that race, it qualifies as science fiction. But I just didn't care much for it. I much preferred The Incredible Hulk to this show. Now, that's and that's not on my list either.
Well, it didn't make mine. I mean, again, it's a show that I watched. I enjoyed it. But was it just, I'm sorry, it just didn't crack my top 10.
Okay, well, let's take a look at number 9 that they had, and that was Firefly.
Wow, now there's a controversial show. I can understand why maybe they wanted it. I think that's more wishful thinking on their part. I've seen Firefly. I've seen the movie Serenity. I liked it. It was great fun. It did some very interesting things in that it shows this very odd, almost dystopic type future where you've got cowboys in space who are speaking, who are flipping back and forth between English and Mandarin, Mandarin Chinese. So that made it kind of fascinating. But the only reason I think this show, and this is why I didn't put it on my list, it did not earn it because it was a great show. It ended up on their list because it got canceled too soon.
Perhaps.
Oddly enough, respect, it achieved cult status for that alone.
New Scientist magazine a couple years ago polled their readership as to what the greatest science fiction of all time was, and Firefly came in number 1.
No, I would not. Absolutely not.
Now,
I love Firefly, but okay. Again, I wouldn't put it in my top 10 because...
Well, here's a confession.
I don't think it qualifies.
I don't like Joss Whedon. And I think Buffy the Vampire Slayer is one of the most overrated shows ever. If it weren't for Sarah Michelle Gellar, the show would have nothing going for it, in my opinion. Couldn't stand the show.
I really didn't get much into Buffy either.
And
I
the
tried,
people
didn't work.
Who are... Well, I won't make rude comments about how much they love Joss Whedon, but I'm sure they do any favor for him. Joss, is it Joss?
I think it's Joss Whedon.
Joss could be. That Whedon guy. I'm sure they do any favor for him, he asked. I don't know. Is he going to turn out to be another Lucas? You remember the days when Lucas was treated like that because he was the brilliant genius behind Star Wars, and now
he's something of a laughing stock.
He is now. So I don't know. So I have Buffy the Vampire Slayer put me right off his work. So I've never seen Firefly.
Until today.
You actually
watched it.
It's on Netflix, and I did some watching this afternoon right after. And then I will finish the show because it's interesting. It's not bad. I mean, I saw the first three episodes, and I said, I would sit through the whole thing of this. I'm not insulted by it. It doesn't bother me the way Buffy does with its self-referential, I'm so cool humor. It seems to be a serious take and a different look at the future. As you say, it's a... one solar system, hundreds of terraformed planets, slow-moving spacecraft, and basically a Western. Basically a post-Civil War Western,
right,
dealing with, disenfranchised ex-Confederate soldiers is what it really appears to be to me. But, so, I don't know. I don't, in the three episodes I did, was not on my way to thinking this is the best ever. But it does appear to be possibly the best thing I've seen made in the last 15 years.
It would have been interesting to see what would have happened with that series had it been allowed to continue. Maybe then it could have honestly achieved top 10 status. But again, I think the only reason these people are putting it on their list is because everybody talks about it, not because it was great, but because it got canceled before its time.
Well, although based on its ratings, it wasn't before its time, but yeah.
Well, you can get into the whole issue about what Fox was doing.
Yeah.
So I won't argue those issues, but I think they put it on the list for the wrong reasons.
Okay, number 8 on their list is also one that's not on either of our lists, and that is Farscape. Fire away.
I really don't know where quite to begin with this show. It's a fascinating look, especially with the Jim Henson use Muppets. Of Muppets.
I've only been able to sit through three episodes of the show.
It kept feeling like it was trying to reinvent itself. Like it wasn't quite sure what it was. And for that alone, I was not able to stay locked into it. And I know there are people who are going to completely disagree with that assessment. It just didn't grab me. Did it break new ground? Well, maybe in the way they had their aliens, the concept of the Leviathan ship. Well, that's not necessarily new. Star Trek had done that before. So, did it break new ground? I don't think so. I mean, it did. I don't know if it ever really became water cooler talk. You know, people would, everybody would gather around at work. Oh, did you see last night's Farscape? You know, I never heard that go on. Except only among the most diehard of sci-fi fans.
I just totally out of touch with that, so I'm not even going to say. I watched about 3-4 episodes of it at various points, and there was just nothing there that made me want to come back and watch it again. So I'm not gonna disparage on it, but it didn't seem that amazingly compelling.
Yeah, this is entirely subjective, of course.
It is. It is entirely subjective, but such is all of life is entirely subjective until you're hit by a truck. Okay, they're number 7, and I think we can agree on this one. I'm pretty sure we can. At least that it's on the list. The X-Files.
Yes, I'd agree with that. What is your take on that?
The X-Files is has some good and it has some bad, and I think the good overwhelms the bad. Kind of ignoring the tail end of it, it was getting pretty.
It lost
bored.
Its way at the end.
It lost its way, particularly when Mulder left. I think what was really good about it was an interesting combination of the police procedural, the FBI procedural, and the supernatural, and that made it unique. But what also made it unique was not just the chemistry between Mulder and Scully, which is very good, and the characterization of the two of them playing against each other. I mean, that's really where the story
That was the meat of the story.
But the other thing was that all of the weird things that happened in the show, they always had a slightly different take. If they brought on vampires, they were not quite what vampires are.
Not the classic vampires.
Exactly. And you could just about do that with anything that they did, except maybe the aliens. But and so it was always very imaginative when it came to replaying with these legends. And that's the entertaining dialogue, the fact that Fox Mulder is the main character, and he's extremely bright, which I always like to see on a TV show, when the hero is actually a smart thinking person. Scully was also very sharp, but with a different point of view. It was a show that was at the right place at the right time for the first, 5 years or so.
One of the things that I really thought was great about it, it was a show that I just criticized Farscape for reinventing itself. But I think when X-Files did it, they knew exactly what they were doing. So you'd have one week, you'd have the science fiction. Next week, you'd have possibly something that was kind of a horror monster-based. All the while, you had this underlining conspiracy that was going on, that there were government agents or a government body that they kind of knew what was going on all along. So that's what tied all of these episodes together. I would say that X-Files, it cracked the demographic lines. non-sci-fi people were flocking towards it.
Yes.
And that's why it ended up on my list, because if you can get non-sci-fi watchers, people, because both of us know a lot of people that just don't really get into science fiction like we do. But they would go to X-Files because there was just something there that spoke to a much larger crowd, not just a science fiction crowd. But there's a lot of intelligent thinking people that just don't necessarily follow science fiction, and this show spoke to them.
Now,
and in that, I thought it qualified for my list.
There was one bad thing about the X-Files, though. Incidents of people believing BS nonsense, more alien sightings, more stuff, had increased with the X-Files. And part of the problem is that the show, even though it was fictional, has kind of set back the cause of, you know, there is no such thing as ghosts, people, in a measurable way. I've seen some, you know, studies of reports of UFOs and stuff, and I mean, the X-Files actually impacted that. With the argument that correlation does not always equal causation, but it's a fairly observed phenomena that when you have something popular that brings up these kinds of crazy psychics and UFOs and Bigfoots and stuff, that the number of people who see them and perceive them goes up.
Yeah, it doesn't help that at the end of their opening credits, they always said, the truth is out there.
Yeah, I mean, they played it as if it's absolutely real, and
which to the intelligent watcher, I mean, we understand what they're doing. This is more about the conspiracy within the overall context of the story, not that this is some big gigantic true to life government cover up that we're going through today.
Well, anyway, so that is the X-Files. The other thing I guess we should say about the X-Files is that the story arcs that they had. And this will be a complaint, I know, because we're coming up on one that I'm going to complain about pretty quick. The story arcs in the X-Files were, you know, there were a handful of standalone episodes, the vast majority of the standalone episodes. And then there were what they called the mythos episodes that, you know, went back to the aliens and the black oil aliens and the and the clones.
Mulder's abducted sister.
Mulder's abducted sister. Yeah, that whole conspiracy angle and that particular piece. Those stories, even though they were interspersed, the conspiracy seemed so big that most of the time I didn't feel like they were throwing just part of a story at me. I felt like I was getting a standalone story that just kind of brushed up against that conspiracy, even if they discovered something new. So I didn't walk away from those episodes going, you left me with too much unfinished business. And that was good in the X-Files. There are other shows coming up on this list.
Yeah, I think I know which one you're going to go with.
That didn't work that way.
Let me go on to say that I did not watch. I was not a regular watcher of X-Files. I had this really bad run of luck that every time I would decide, okay, I'm hearing a lot of really great things going on about where the show's going, that I would tune into an episode, and lo and behold, it would be something that was just so thoroughly disgusting.
Oh, that inbred family.
Well, no, actually the one that I'm thinking about is the flatworm.
Oh, yeah, that was nasty.
That was just gross. And I watched that and I thought, I'm done. Well, no, the guy in the shower who spits one out onto in the shower stall and with the midst with blood and everything, I thought, okay, I'm done.
There were some episodes of the X-Files that were so utterly. There is one, and that's with the inbred family, and I can't think of the name of the episode right now.
I remember that one too.
Watch it.
And the funny thing is, with the episode that I just described. I can't watch. I'm done. And then I keep hearing all these great things about where the show was doing. I thought, okay, I'll give it one more try. And then what do I watch? Inbred Family. I thought, okay, I can't win on this TV series. So naturally, I didn't watch it on a regular basis. But I still included it on my list because it did cross demographic lines in terms of what people were watching. And it wasn't just science fiction fans that fell in love with the show. Non-sci-fi fans fell in love with it. So that's why it's on my list.
Okay, well, number six on their list, and this one really changed the tenor of my list when I saw this on their list, and I was able to go, okay, we'll go outside. And they've chosen The Prisoner.
Interesting.
Which I would not, had I been given this assignment in a vacuum, I would not have thought of The Prisoner.
And funny, you know, The Prisoner flashed in my mind, and then it immediately flashed out, not because I thought it was a bad show. I thought it was a great show.
No, it's a brilliant show.
I just don't think it's science fiction.
It's a brilliant program, and that it is that they would call that science fiction. In a way, it kind of is. Because
With Rover.
Well, if you look at the 1960s, and you know, many of the things that exist in the village they exist now, but they didn't exist then. So right. We are talking about, you know, an extrapolation of advanced technology and in a bizarre fantasy concept. So, okay, I'm not going to disagree. I've put it on my list because it is one of the greatest TV shows ever made.
I agree with
whether
that.
Whether you define it as science fiction or not. What I particularly liked about it was that Patrick McGoohan, although he didn't write all the episodes, in a way you could say he was the auteur of this.
Oh, it clearly had his vision.
It's his vision.
Yes.
It's the story he wanted to tell.
His fingerprints all over it.
The practical upstart is that they expanded it from X number of episodes to 2X number of episodes, and so they had to bring in a bunch more writers and put in some episodes which would be filler. Excellent episodes, but not necessarily woven into the tight story that it had originally intended to be. And I like the surrealistic edge. Things happen like mini-bokes show up when you think about needing a taxi. Where, you know, there's no taxi around, you walk to the taxi stand, and boom, there's a taxi there. Is that a manifestation of technology, their constant surveillance, or is that a disconnect from reality? There's this air of surrealism to the entire environment.
I remember every time I watched it, when I was first watching the series, it was on a PBS station back when I lived in California. And after every episode, they ran it every Sunday night, and after every episode, there would be this panel of prisoner fanatics who would gather around. But the thing is that they were not
kind of like
discussing
Fusion Patrol.
Well, yeah. But what they were doing is they were actually discussing it from a metaphorical standpoint, which meant that obviously they were seeing they were viewing the TV series not based in reality, but just this. I don't know what you would call it.
It is an allegorical program.
That's just it. It's a very allegorical program.
And you only have to look at the final episode to.
I was going to say, just watch. You know, who the big reveal about number one is, and yeah, there it is.
If indeed we really were revealed as to who number one was, like, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of argument on
you
that
can,
one.
You can take that one, but it is Patrick McGoohan had to leave the country being England. When the final episode aired, because his life was in danger.
I don't doubt it.
It was too hot to handle, because it was an unbelievably weird ending.
It was very controversial. Yeah. Very bizarre.
And we'll just leave it at that for the people who haven't seen that. But absolutely go get The Prisoner on A&E DVD or higher grade. They've done a beautiful job of restoring those. And watch it,
and it'll
enjoy
keep it'll keep you guessing all the way to the end.
Absolutely, absolutely. Next on their list, and where you and I part the ways, is Lost.
All right, now Lost is on my list.
Yes,
it is on my list, but let me clarify a few things here. again, my criteria is, was this TV show talked about? That's one of them.
Yeah, it was.
This show was heavily talked about. I knew a lot of people, who didn't follow the science fiction shows that I enjoyed that were all over this TV series. And even some, even many of my sci-fi friends were following Lost, and they kept badgering me to watch it. Keith and I tried watching. We got through three episodes and said, you know, this is just not flying for me.
So you put it on your list, but you don't really like it.
No.
That's an interesting...
I don't like the TV series, but just because I don't like it didn't mean that I don't think it didn't deserve it.
Interesting.
I didn't care for the TV series at all.
I think it represents one of the worst aspects of modern writing in television, and that is this overwhelming need now to have some sort of long, twisty, windy story. And anytime I watched Lost, I was not once convinced that they had a clue where they were going.
I felt the same way.
They were just throwing crap in to keep the audience guessing, and you know, it's like,
oh, especially every time the series got renewed,
like, oh,
I kind of get the feeling that, okay, well, we need to pad this some more.
Let's get some more stuff. I don't know.
Maybe we're wrong. I don't know, but that was the feeling that I got.
So they were yanking the chain of the audience, in my opinion.
I was never really. I at no point did I feel like I was actually making progress in discovering the secret of the island. Why are they all there? Any of these details. I never felt like I was actually progressing through this story arc. But I felt like I was just wandering in the dark the entire time.
Well, considering how the show ended.
Oh, God. I'm glad I didn't watch it.
Considering how the show ended, I'm going to say that anybody out there who thought Lost was a good idea, or, you know, or is curious about Lost, ignore that and go get the British TV series Life on Mars and Ashes to Ashes.
Yeah.
And you got to watch through all 5 years of those two shows, five in total. Staggeringly good show. I wouldn't call them science fiction, or they would absolutely, Life on Mars would be on my list, but I don't. But it's kind of ultimately ends up to be the same thing as Lost.
Well,
so.
I would say that a lot of people who were 100% dedicated, loyal Lost fans, when they saw that last episode, man, there was an uprising. They were pissed off.
As much as the people who watched Battlestar Galactica?
Same thing.
Same thing.
Same kind of uprising. It for exactly, virtually the same reason.
Just taking a dump on your audience, yeah.
Basically, yeah.
Okay, well, so there. That's an interesting one. Neither of us like it. Ben puts it on his list. I don't put it on my list.
No, I hated the TV series, but because, again, everybody talked about it, it qualified.
Okay, fair enough. Now, they have put, as we mentioned, The Twilight Zone and The Outer Limits on together, and I totally disagree with that, and I'm going to disagree because they are not the same show.
They're not the same show.
Just because they're black and white does not make them the same TV show. Not every show from the black and white era is the same program. That's just crazy, people.
Well, they're black and white, and
they're not the same at all. One is strictly science fiction.
Outer Limits.
And one is
a hodgepodge.
Strictly. I don't even know what you'd call it. Yeah, I mean, it's Twilight Zone. That's really...
It's part mystery, it's part horror, it's part sci-fi. It's a big hodgepodge of the bizarre.
Well-written stories.
Very well-written. I think what happened is whoever put this list together that we're reviewing, they saw two anthology series and lumped them together, or at least put them on the same level. And I would completely disagree with that. Twilight Zone did not end up on my list. Again, not because I thought it was a bad show. I thought it was a great show. I just didn't find it to be science fiction. So it didn't qualify. Outer Limits, on the other hand, clearly sci-fi. I remember growing up reading, you know, amazing stories and various different anthology sci-fi magazines. So to have an anthology-type television show that was science fiction-based, and some of it was just downright I mean, really unusual to the downright scary, some very scary science fiction episodes. I thought it was some of the most brilliant writing that I had seen for that period. So, yeah, absolutely, I would put it on that list, but I would not put it on the same level as Twilight Zone. I wouldn't tie it with Twilight Zone. Absolutely not. They're two entirely different shows.
The Twilight Zone, of course, has led to much pop culture stuff. I mean, references that people still... To Serve Man! I mean, is probably Bill Shatner and the Gremlin on the wing. There are just some iconic moments in the Twilight Zone that even younger people know. And you see them again and again in parody and, you know, homages over time that keep them fresh. The Outer Limits, not so much. And we aren't talking about the original Outer Limits, not the newer Outer Limits, although there were some good stories in the newer Outer Limits as well, but it was a different show.
Right.
But, you know, there are programs in the Outer Limits that you could say are the precursor to The Terminator. There was, like, the man with the glass hand.
Demon with the glass hand, Harlan Ellison.
Right. Robert Culp starred in that one, and did a good performance for Robert Culp, because he's always been kind of a funny actor. I like him, but he's always...
And that episode developed some pretty strong cult status among sci-fi fans.
Right, and, you know, there's David McCallum was in an episode with six fingers and a big forehead, and it's just, you know, great show.
Now, I put it on my list because, again, not because it broke boundaries as far as a viewing type audience, but because we were being given an anthology sci-fi series, which, to my mind, was a brand new idea, and that's why I put it on my list.
Fair enough. All right, and they're both on my list as separate entities as they deserve, in my opinion. But okay. The next one up is the Battlestar Galactica reboot.
Oh, boy.
And I am quite positive we are going to part ways on this one. So, what do you think of Battlestar Galactica? The reboot.
The reboot? Okay, here again, this is just like Lost. I hated it, but it's on my list.
Oh, I thought you liked Battlestar Galactica.
No, I couldn't stand this show.
Oh, I couldn't stand it either, and it's not on my list.
I really despised it.
I'd rather watch Man from Atlantis.
No, boy.
I would actually rather watch Man from Atlantis. Now, Man from Atlantis is a worse show. I will say that. It's poorly made, and it has worse scripts. But at least I don't feel dirty after watching it, which is what I feel every time I watch Battlestar Galactica. It's like you are shoving a soap opera down my throat when I don't want to watch a soap opera, and I'm not... Well, I don't like these characters. There isn't a single character on Battlestar Galactica, the reboot, that I wouldn't flush out an airlock so fast it's not even funny.
Yeah,
and I don't watch programs where I hate all the characters.
Right.
Just that simple.
There was not one character there that I thought had any redeeming... Well, actually, I take that back. There were one or two that did have redeeming qualities.
Oh, Six of Nine had
some
redeeming qualities, too. But, you know, she could do those just standing there.
But even some of just the humans, there were some, but they didn't rank high enough as far as cast members go to warrant that.
I'll tell you what, two of the things that they did in the show that I just despise the cinema verite camera work for the spaceships.
Well, I hate that.
And Firefly is the same way. Watching that today and just going, oh, not again. I detest that.
Well, one of the things that Battlestar Galactica did is they were really big on the handheld camera kind of gimmick. So many times you felt like you were watching this documentary, and no, I don't care for that.
It
becomes
that way
vomit vision as far as I'm concerned. I put it on my list because, again, they were doing some rather unusual things. I mean, it was kind of neat to see this science fiction show. Yet, when you get onto the bridge, you saw everything that looked like it came out of a present-day aircraft carrier. So there was something very anachronistic about the show, which kind of set it apart. And again, everybody was talking about it. I wasn't talking about it because I thought it was a terrible show. Now, and we had the same situation with this as we did with Lost, and that you've got this enormous story arc where the whole goal is to find this Earth. And they strung us along. I tried to watch the show. Keith and I actually stuck to it for 2 seasons. So, you know, yeah. And they just kept stringing us along, and we never really got anywhere, to the point where I just finally said, I'm giving up.
Here's the other thing that would have been interesting with this, with the new Battlestar Galactica, and indeed even with the old Battlestar Galactica, had they gone there or had they considered it. And one of the things that plays a high point in Battlestar Galactica is religion. There's a lot of religious talk in the program, and comparative religion, if you will.
Yeah.
And that's a fascinating, that's a topic that not many places are willing to take on. And I find it a fascinating topic, and they could have done some good stuff with it. But what I don't like, my personal point of view, is that as they ramble on about this stuff, they start revealing, hey, wait a minute. This stuff's real. You know, ooh, the mystical, magical stuff we talked about. It's actually happening. It's like, you know, say what you will about the validity of it. Miracles don't occur in real life in this day and age. And the interesting part about it is the interaction and the motivations and the counter motivations of the people. I found the whole Cylon thing about, you know, God made man made the Cylons to correct God's mistake, and kind of attitude there, an interesting way of evolving a religion. And so that's a fascinating notion to explore. But then, you know, at the end, they're getting a baby, hybrid babies, and all that kind of stuff, and it was just, and I didn't watch all the show by any stretch of the imagination, just bits here and there, so, you know, I may be slightly mischaracterizing, but you know what I mean? And in the original one, in the original Galactica, they could have gone somewhere very interesting with the whole Count Ebley being an alien manifestation of the devil, and the Cylons having Ebley's voice that, you know, there could have been some fascinating science fiction-y tales of the fall.
And they didn't go there.
You know, they wouldn't have done it back in those days anyway. But it was hinted at, and it would have been a fascinating story if they had done it, and they didn't. So that's the one thing about the mythos of Battlestar Galactica that I feel has been a miss on both series, but was its greatest potential. Is to follow that route and be a little daring, but hey, there we go.
It was a show that I thought I don't think they really had a plan. In fact, I think I actually read somewhere that they were kind of winging it, just like they were with Lost. They were kind of winging it at some point, because you'd see the episode, and if I felt like, okay, so I didn't quite find some of the religious aspects of the series. I didn't find them quite as objectionable as you did.
What?
But what bothered me is how they kept taking these really obtuse turns that felt like, okay, I've made several steps forward, and now you've kicked me off the path. And now I got to find my way back onto the path as a viewer. And it's, and in the meantime, you were just telling stories that really don't add to this overall story arc. And I'm not a huge fan of the whole story arc thing, generally speaking, because I think a lot of television shows don't get it right. And Battlestar Galactica is one of them. It did not get it right, in my opinion.
And nowadays it seems like everybody has to have it.
Everybody's doing it. Everybody's doing it now. And I will address that whole bit, because there's one television show that we're coming up to, which obviously covers that subject.
Yes.
But too many shows are doing it now, and many of them don't have a really good clue as to how to make it work.
No. And
Galactica didn't.
That the television industry itself really, is not suitable for that. Because if you're going to tell a story over, say, 5 years, you kind of need to have a 5-year commitment, and they don't do that.
Right.
You know, there's Firefly at 13 or 14 episodes. You know, if they had an arc going in that show, which didn't seem like it so far much.
They do.
The girl.
The girl.
The brain dead girl.
Yeah, they have an arc, and it all kind of comes to fruition in the movie Serenity.
Yeah, so they just didn't have time to do it, and so it's not finishing telling the story. At least with another show that gets canceled quickly, you have 13 or 14 stories, not just 13, 14 parts of the story. But anyway, all right. Well, let's move on to their next one, which is a more uncontroversial choice, and that is Star Trek Classic.
Now, I think what is interesting is where this rates. Where did it rate on their list?
Number two.
Number two, and if I'm not mistaken, you more or less. It's in your top.
It's in my top. It would be about one or two, yeah.
I put it as number two on mine. I will explain why it's two.
Well, your one and two are the same as what I would put as my...
It's a very tough call when you hear what our number one's going to be, and I think for our regular listeners, it's a no-brainer. classic Star Trek, wow. Here's a show that did both things on my criteria, and that is it broke new ground. There was no such thing. There was no science fiction show ever quite like it. Say what you will about Gene Roddenberry as a writer, he certainly had a pretty good vision as to what kind of a TV show he wanted, and Star Trek became that. And as far as did it make its way into pop culture, I think that all you have to do is just look around at the gazillion conventions that go on and the enormous popularity of the J.J. Abrams Star Trek reboot that came out. I mean, that kind of shows the incredible popularity of the show itself. So, yes, it is definitely part of our pop culture.
We have a lot. Science fiction on television, as we know, owes a lot to Star Trek and has a lot to blame for Star Trek, too. I put it on my list because... this is a show that I adored as a child.
Me too.
And I mean, it was on every day, and I watched it every day. I know, like many Star Trek fans, I can sit there and recite every line, word and verse, character per character, because I've seen every episode 100 times at the absolute least. But one of the things that puts Star Trek on this list is that I can watch an episode of Star Trek today, and they are still relevant.
They stand up.
They stand up to the time. A few of them are a little bit 60s, but by and large, they're still about good and doing what's right and having a good, solid compass for...
Well, there's some pretty strong... There's some very eternal values. Well, I hate to use the word eternal.
But
that's the word I'm going to use. There are some values to these stories that they're not dated. They go beyond that. They speak to issues of the human character. And as you're... So, yeah, no wonder the show resonated so much with the American public, and I think the world public, and even Gene Roddenberry stated that he felt the TV watching audience was a lot smarter than network executives were willing to give them credit
for. They'd have to be.
And so he wanted to have intelligent episodes written. And there were some very good episodes that many of them, they borrowed from bits of classic cinema or classic literature. I mean, from Moby Dick to Run Silent, Run Deep. I mean, there was just some great ideas that are, they're eternal. I mean, that's the only word I can think of, right? They're timeless.
Timeless, that's
some timeless ideas that they managed to really work into this TV series and do it in a bloody good way.
Now, here's why, actually, I would go, so I'll go out and say, like these guys, like you, I'll put Star Trek at number two.
I'll put mine as number two.
I'm going to put it at number two. I didn't actually number mine. I kind of lumped mine in high and low. But Star Trek would have to be in the top two, and it is in the top two. And here's why. And here's why Star Trek Classic is, in my opinion, stands alone from the later Star Trek. And here are the things that Star Trek has to answer for. The crew of the Enterprise, Kirk, are moral. They are good people. They're trying to do the right thing. They are the best of the best. And they're out there helping and solving problems. In absolutely 100% direct contradiction of the Prime Directive, time and time again, I think the Prime Directive in Star Trek, which of course they adhered to much more slavishly in Next Generation, is the stupidest, most asinine thing that Gene Roddenberry ever came up with. And here's why. It is the most cynical position I can imagine. It's based on the flawed premise that we can do no good. We can go out there, but if you talk to these people, you're gonna screw something up. And that's wrong. And Kirk and the crew never bothered with it. They gave it lip service once in a while, but they did the right thing. And the right thing is to help. It is not to turn your back on people because you say, well, you know, if I try to help them, then it turns out they'll get smallpox and they'll die, so better just leave them alone. You know, the history of mankind says we're all screwed up. And I think that not only has that, you know, fouled up later Star Treks, it's fouled up our society because many, many people hold that attitude that human beings screw everything up. That's the heart of the environmentalist movement in many ways. Like, ooh, we can't do anything. Oh, we can't build anything. Oh, we can't do this. We can't do that because we'll just screw it up. We're just stupid humans. We ruin everything we touch. Well, that's Gene Roddenberry talking right there. And I utterly, utterly disagree with it. And that's why the other show is number one on my list, because it is absolutely the diametric opposite position of that. It is all about breaking the Prime Directive from the word go. And the other thing that I'm going to rant on about Star Trek, and I love Star Trek, Mr. Spock is not very logical. Mr. Spock is dispassionate. Logic as presented on Star Trek bears no resemblance to the actual formal science of logic. Spock is not particularly logical. His decisions are not particularly logical. They're dispassionate. And
that's the joke.
And he's given, but people don't get that as a joke. They think that's what passes for logic. They think that, you know, that's not what logic is. Logic is a way of determining, I hate to use the word truth, because then you get into epistemology.
That gets very subjective.
But it's a way of discarding invalid arguments and positions, and well, it's got nothing to do with emotion. And you know, yes, Spock did have emotions, and you know, but that really is secondary to this whole lip service to the Vulcan logical way. It's not, people have taken that to be what logic is, and frankly, it's got a negative connotation because in Star Trek, we're constantly shown that Spock is inadequate because Kirk and McCoy have compassion. And they have intuition, and Spock does not, even though he's extremely smart and helps them immensely. But he's ultimately not the one that makes the right decisions.
Well,
in the end.
I don't 100% agree with that. But
anyway, those are the two things that I have, that because Star Trek has such a huge influence, I think I see that in real life for people my age and a bit younger, because it's just, it's ingrained in the psyche that's what logic is, that's, you know, that mankind will screw stuff up. It's
I think that's a reflection also of the culture of the day.
You know, that's,
so it had a different tone than it did when Next Generation came out. I don't 100% agree with your assessment on that, but that's an argument for another time.
All right, and finally on the list of their list, there is Doctor Who.
This was not a surprise.
This was not a surprise, if not for the incredible length of time that it's been on, that its longevity, its imagination, the fact that it's just darn fun show to watch.
I put it on my list because, again, here's a show that did two things. It came out in the early 60s. To have a science fiction show of this nature was unheard of. So it was breaking new ground. Two, it became so pop culture. All you have to do is read all the stories about when the second full-length episode was airing, and that was the Daleks, and how children are reported to be hiding behind their sofas, looking around the corner as these very scary, and I would say the Daleks were scary in this story, how they were completely petrified by this thing, and yet the very next day, there they'd be on the school ground finding trash cans, screaming exterminate at each other. The fact that they were doing that shows the immense popularity of this TV series. So, and the fact that it has lasted this long is what I think totally vaults it right to the number one position.
It also, it's number one, and like I said, to contrast it to Star Trek, the Doctor is absolutely morally...
Oh, he's a rule breaker.
Well, he's morally correct too. I mean, he is a force for good.
And he'll interfere and.
And in fact, he broke the prime directive of the Time Lords, which is they were complete and utter non-intervention. We watch, we see things live, die, burn, wars. Doesn't matter. Time Lords don't interfere. And the Doctor.
He interferes all over the place.
He stands for interfering. Now, of course, they've kind of gotten away with that now that they've wiped out the Time Lords. But he's still the same force for good.
I think they sort of balance that out a little bit by also with many episodes, not all of them, but with many of them, you'd see the Doctor who would surround himself with natives, the natives of wherever the story was taking place, and try to motivate them to take a stand, to help them become better people as well. So, that's actually something that I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
That it just wasn't the Doctor who was charging in and making whatever mess that he's so capable of doing, but helping other people around them, helping them to realize that they could be better individuals.
Yes. All right. So, we're going to leave you on a cliffhanger tonight because we're going to come back in part two and we're going to talk about those items that were not on Uzurama's top 10 list. We're going to be talking about what's left from Ben's and my lists.
Our lists.
Our lists and why. And why we think that there are some more shows that you should be consideration. So we hope you'll join us again on our next episode. And until then, stay tuned for part two.
Cheers.
You've been listening to the Fusion Patrol Podcast, a production of Lone Locust Productions. Join us on our new discussion forums at FusionPatrol.com. Find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter, username Fusion Patrol. You can also send us feedback by email at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. If you'd like to support Fusion Patrol, please leave us a review on iTunes. Fusion Patrol's theme music is Fight the Future by Amberwolf.